Have we become hyper-allergic to TV ads? Well, case in point, the Olympic Games. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. If you've been watching the Olympics, you're familiar with what seems like a formula. You get to watch Phelps or Ledecky swim a couple of laps in the pool, then you're hit with a from here to eternity's worth of TV ads. It's been this way for as long as NBC's been broadcasting the Games. But this time viewers are complaining about it all over social media, Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
I wanted to get a sense of what people were complaining about, so naturally I took to Twitter. One of my favorites was basically, why is NBC interrupting my commercials for the Olympics? Twitter is actually where I linked up with Amanda Wright in Milwaukee.
I feel like there are just so many commercial breaks.
Actually, the number of commercials is down from 4 years ago, but it's still a huge ad buy. NBC said it sold more than $1.2 billion worth. The network acknowledged the Twitter storm, but blamed the complaints on people getting used to binge-watching entire series commercial-free. Matthew Quint teaches at Columbia Business School. He says NBC's not likely to change anything because $1 billion matters more to them than your tweets.
You're going to need advertisers choosing to spurn spending on the Olympics to create a major change.
Could that spending cut happen? Well, ratings are down in Rio. Maybe when the games are in Tokyo 4 years from now, we'll have fewer commercials to tweet our complaints about. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
We're also following Facebook's abrupt switch yesterday to a system that forces its ads past consumers' ad-blocking software, whether users like it or not. If you missed that on the air, it'll be at marketplace.org later on. Let's check the markets. The FT 100 in London is down 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up slightly 2.5 hours or so before the opening bell here. The Dow futures up 2 points. It has been 1 year since the financial world felt what you might call a disturbance in the force. August 10th, 2015, China's central bank cut a key exchange rate by about 0.2%. Actually, it was about 2%. And boom, down went the yuan, the biggest collapse in the Chinese currency in more than 20 years. Just trying to align things with supply and demand was the explanation from the People's Bank of China. Was this the first shot of a new trade war, some thought? Well, quite a day, recalls Sean Ryan in Shanghai. He's managing director of the China Market Research Group.
A year ago, traders were expecting that China would start a currency war and devalue the renminbi by 30% or more in order to boost up its exports that were sputtering at the time. But the reality, David, is in the past year, China has been a pretty good actor on the global stage. They've only devalued the renminbi 8%, which is actually a lot less considering what's happened with Brexit.
But the way they rolled it out a year ago confused some. I mean, in the fullness of time, if that is what the Chinese central bank's intention was, people thought something bigger was happening. That suggests there was a communication problem.
There was a big communication problem between the Chinese government and international investors, but perhaps even more importantly, miscommunication with Chinese domestic investors. And that's why starting last September and October, there was a lot of capital outflow coming from China, but they've improved in the last 3 to 6 months.
Well, that's interesting. In other words, learning from a mistake.
Yeah, they learned from their mistakes. They also replaced a few of the economic leaders. And so there's a lot more happiness, a lot more calm in the markets within China. And that's why you see, even though the renminbi has continued to slowly depreciate, you're actually not seeing that much capital outflight anymore because Chinese consumers and Chinese companies feel that the renminbi is going to remain relatively stable.
Sean Ryan at the China Market Research Group is also author of The End of Copycat China, The Rise of Creativity, Innovation, and Individualism in Asia. Sean, thank you.
Always good speaking with you, David.
Often, when you buy a house in a low-lying area, the mortgage lender makes you have flood insurance. But in some parts of the country, the lender doesn't keep checking. Plus, national flood insurance is getting tougher to get and more expensive. In West Virginia, where a flood killed 23 people in June, floods are common. But flood insurance, not so much. Ann Lee has the story from West Virginia.
Clendenin is a small town in Kanawha County, nestled between a river and a steep hill. It's the perfect terrain for inland flooding. In late June, rainwater rushed down the hill and rose up from the river, topping at 33 feet. Kanawha County was one of the hardest hit by the floods. Carrie Linger, a volunteer, shows me the banks of the river.
Where we're standing right now, If you look to your right, there's the water line. If we were standing here when the flood happened, we would have been washed away. It's over our head.
Many property owners are underestimating their risk. Some victims say they don't need flood insurance because what happened this time was a 1,000-year flood. That's a geological term that can be misleading. Here's Steve Kite, a geology professor at West Virginia University.
A 100-year flood has a 1% chance of occurring in a given year if the past is the key to the future. But as watersheds change due to land use or climate change, then what in the past may in the future become even more frequent than that.
Others here say that flood insurance simply isn't affordable. FEMA says that, on average, American homeowners pay about $700 a year for flood insurance premiums. Yet the National Flood Insurance Program is $24 billion in debt, in part because it tried to keep costs low for property owners. The cost of premiums couldn't cover disasters like Hurricane Sandy or Katrina. And because hurricanes cost so much, even less money is available to cover the inland flooding that happens in West Virginia. But plans to gradually raise premium rates are in place. And for now, FEMA has so far awarded a total of about $72 million in federal assistance to the victims of one of the deadliest floods in West Virginia history. In Clendenin, West Virginia, I'm Ann Lee from Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.